Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know, there's 7 billion people on this planet, all of whom can breathe. You know, maybe not everyone feels like doing yoga or going to the gym. Maybe not everyone has access to the healthiest food, but everyone can breathe. And for now, it's free.
Yeah. So, like,
for now.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast with me, Dr. Rupi, where we are going to be discussing the most important topics and concepts in the medicinal qualities of food and lifestyle. Now, today's guest is Richie Bostock, or the Breath Guy. He's made it his mission to spread the life-changing possibilities of breathing. This episode is Breathe for Health. Breathing is the only system in our body that is both automatic and also under our control. And that is not an accident of nature. It is by design, and it is key to becoming healthy, happy, and high performing. And that's according to Richie's own experiences with breathwork as well. It's completely shifted his own life and beliefs on the potential of human beings. He's had some incredible experiences traveling around the world and learning from one of the modern day masters of breathwork, Wim Hof. You can catch Richie at festivals, workshops, and retreats. The links to all of them are on the show notes. And also his book, Exhale, The Science and Art of Breathwork, is out on March 2020. I am definitely going to get myself a copy, and so should you. And talking about books, my new book, Eat to Beat Illness, is out now. I talk about the nutritional science and the lifestyle practices that improve so many different aspects of our well-being, our brain, our skin, our immunity. Also, check out the newsletter for thedoctorskitchen.com. You can sign up at the website. There's loads of fascinating information that I'm trying to pump out every 2 weeks. No spam, just pure nutritional and lifestyle goodness. On to the podcast. Richie, welcome to the pod, mate.
Mate, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
It's nice to have an Aussie in the studio. It just makes everything really happy. You know?
I don't know what happened. You know, we came over from the UK, got some sunshine. All of a sudden, we're like the happiest people in the world. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I lived there for 2 years, yeah. So I completely get the Aussie vibe. You know, that whole well-being lifestyle, living by the beach, eating well. You know, there's a lot of reason as to why, you know, I think Aussies are super happy. And yeah, it's great to have you in the studio, man, so thank you so much for coming down. So for those who don't know a bit about what you do, I think it would be great to get into what your background is, why you're so fascinated by breath work, and at the moment it just seems to be blowing up. Like, there's so many things that you're getting involved, and also from a clinical perspective as well, I think there's some really interesting research coming out. So yeah,
it's really crazy how quickly it's caught on, and I think it's just because it's breathing.
Yeah.
like everyone can do it, you know, if you have a nose and a mouth and a pair of lungs, then it means you qualify. So how I got into it, well, funnily enough, you know, I wasn't always teaching people how to breathe for a living. I'm from Australia originally, and
Brisbane.
Yeah, you were in Sydney.
Yeah. I've been to Brisbane. I like Brisbane.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I love it. It's
really nice. There's not a heap going on there.
There's not too much going on. There's some nice on the outskirts, I think, of the actual city itself. But yeah,
the best part is you're close to amazing beaches.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So. average.
Average,
at
okay.
best. And I'm being generous, yeah, even yeah. with that, to be honest with you. I've given it a go and can get up on a wave, but that's about it.
Okay.
So when I was in Brisbane, I was working as a management consultant. So 6 years in the corporate life. Working 70-hour weeks, doing what is very common, especially in places like London, you know, just living, burning the candle at both ends.
Mm.
And it was, you know, after a little while that I realized that's not really what I wanted to do. Spent the next year or so trying to work out exactly what that is, starting up a couple of businesses, eventually starting an online business. It was an app for a martial art that I was really interested in at the time,
yeah?
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh,
yeah.
I love Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, you like it?
Yeah, yeah. I've only done a few sessions myself, but I used to watch quite a bit of UFC, like MMA, and some of the best ones had a specialism in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Who is it? Georges St-Pierre?
Yeah.
I think it was a great one. And yeah, a whole bunch of others. So, yeah.
Man of my own heart. GSP is my favorite fighter of all
time. I'm serious.
Yeah, I love that guy.
He's so much respect as well.
Well, he's
GSP.
A traditional martial artist, you know. He's not just like some thug off the street.
Yeah.
He has deep respect for the martial art and the game. And, he actually just retired yesterday.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, he's been getting on a bit. Like, I remember watching him like 5-6 years ago and like when he was at his peak.
Yeah.
But Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I think, is like fascinating. From like a psychological point of view as well, because for those of you who don't know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is I'll let you explain.
So it's a grappling style martial art in that there's no punching, there's no kicking, there's no strikes. It's purely like wrestling or like judo, and the way that you win generally, if you take like competition points aside, is that you have to submit your opponent, make them tap, and that's either through normally a joint lock or a chokehold. And they either tap out and you let go or you go to sleep. From a psychological perspective, you're completely right, because what's different about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu on any grappling martial art versus like a striking martial art or kickboxing, what have you, is that when you spar, you can really go all out because you're not afraid about like punching the person or striking them. So, you know, you're really trying to, you know, you're putting all your effort in.
Yeah.
And when you know that, the only way for that to finish is for someone to submit, which is essentially like, you've got me.
I
have to give in to you.
Exactly,
It's a real test of your ego.
It is.
It's really, really humbling. And you find a lot of people get incredible therapy out of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I think even the hashtag, you know, there's like the hashtag yoga save my life is like a big one. I think it's hashtag BJJ save my life is another
really?
One.
Okay.
I'll
check that one out. You know, it really brings back memories for me because when I was working in Manly and Monavale emergency department, one of our registrars was really into BJJ.
Yeah.
And he would, on his breaks, sit there in front of the computer on YouTube and just watch BJJ, like loads of different masters from around the world, just giving their tips and stuff. And he would like try and do stuff for me as well. And
in the waiting room.
I mean, it came useful sometimes actually when we had like, you know, some drug addict patients coming in, and unfortunately, you know,
I had to restrain them
and stuff. But I remember his forearms were just so big and he just had such like a firm grip. He's the loveliest guy. But yeah, it's amazing.
You find a lot of jiu-jitsu practitioners are the loveliest people because they whenever they're training, they're getting humbled over and over and over again, you know. In their sparring and in their training. So yeah, I used to love it, and I don't do it anymore, unfortunately, just because I kept getting injured.
Really?
Yeah. I've never met a black belt or anyone who's been doing it for a long time that doesn't have a chronic severe back injury, neck injury, knee injury. And I was just like, you know what, it's not worth it.
Yeah,
like,
one of my good friends at the moment is doing it a lot, and he's a general practitioner, and every now and then I see him like every other week, and he's like got a black eye or like cut hair or like graze. I'm like, I thought it was meant to be grappling early, man. Like,
you know? Like, you don't understand. it's a tricky one. It's really tough on your especially your core, your spine, your neck. And that was what I kept getting injured.
Right.
And so I was like, I don't think I can do this anymore.
I tapped out.
Permanently. Yeah. I love it still. I did like capoeira for a little while.
Oh, nice.
Any of these like movement based like exercise or martial arts, I love.
Yeah. Capoeira, I think, is beautiful. Like, you know, the way they move fluid, you know, it's very what's the word for it? It's not a predatory, it's
primal.
Primal, that's the one, yeah, predatorial. Primal, yeah, it's that kind of primal movement where you're swinging your arms and the whole purpose is not to hit the other person.
Exactly,
right?
yeah. Well, when you're doing the they call it the hodas, which is when everyone's in a circle singing and playing instruments and you got the people in the middle. Yeah, it's supposed to be like a dance and a flow. Mm. And that's also really, really beautiful. Yeah. Highly recommend it for anyone who's looking for a new way to work out because the fitness for it is crazy.
Yeah,
because it works on everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember seeing these capoeira dancers. I was traveling in Brazil during medical school, during the breaks, and just watching, I was just mesmerized by the music, first of all, because it's kind of that rhythmic sort of like continuous sound. And then these guys just like kicking and flying and missing each other. And like, it just, yeah, it's like a dance.
When you get to experienced practitioners, like dancing or sparring, or they call it playing. Yeah. It is mesmerizing. Mm. It's hypnotic just watching them in the flow, and they kind of become one, right? They kind of merge together, and it's just incredible.
It's like watching a salsa or a tango or ballroom dancing almost. Yeah,
yeah.
Just like, you know, in pants and stuff.
yeah, that's it. Nothing else.
They don't have as fancy outfits.
Less kicks to the head, though.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to see it in Strictly Come Dancing.
No. Although, you know, that might take them pretty far if they mix it up a bit.
Strictly Come Capoeira. I can see it.
Interesting. Okay, some new ideas there.
We have really digressed.
A little bit, but it's okay. We can get back on track. let me see. Where was I? Oh yeah, so I made that app. So it was around the time when I was running that business that my dad was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, MS. There isn't, like most autoimmune diseases, a real set cure. There isn't a take this pill and it will fix it. Mm. It's more of a lifestyle change. It's more about really assessing what's going on in your life and seeing if there's something that you can do to help it. So my mum and I, we've always really been into health and fitness. She's been a personal trainer, Pilates instructor, dancer. So always been interested and grew up around that kind of stuff, the health and well-being industry anyway.
So
we're always on the lookout for different alternative treatments, just things that he can do. And so on a podcast, quite a few years ago, I came across this guy. His name's Wim Hof, known as the Iceman. For those of you who haven't heard of him before, highly recommend a quick YouTube and just watch one of his videos. He's a unique character, but absolutely one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met. And so he was talking about... Oh, no. So the reason why he's called the Iceman is because he holds... It's around about 20 world records, all related to cold exposure. So
there's a documentary on him, right?
There's a Vice documentary. That's kind of what blew him up a little bit there, like quite a few years ago. He's what has he done? I mean, I think he holds the record for the longest time spent in an ice bath before his core body temperature changed. It was like an hour and 53 minutes or something like that. He's run marathons in the Arctic Circle just wearing his shorts. And when people were like, well, you're just crazy, you can just really, you're amazing at withstanding the cold, this is just your thing, genetic freak, he was like, well, okay, let's test this. And then ran a marathon in the Sahara, one of the big deserts, without drinking water and zero training.
Oh, my God. Definitely not recommended.
Definitely not medical practitioner approved. He was speaking on this podcast, and he talked about his method, which involves cold exposure activities, whether it's cold showers, ice baths, and then also breathing techniques. Mm. And he talked about it as, you know, it's a fantastic thing for everyone to do, great for everyone's health and well-being, but specifically really good for people who have autoimmune diseases. And I was like, okay, sounds interesting. What's this about? Did a bit of research, went to my dad, and... my dad, he's an old school Brit, right? Mm. So, you know, he's maybe a bit more closed-minded, at least at the time.
Yeah.
And so I went to dad and went, hey, Dad, this old Dutch guy called the Iceman says that if you take a cold shower and breathe a bit, it's going to help your MS.
And I can imagine the response.
And like it made real sense when I said it. Yeah. I was like, I'm trying to help you here, right? Like, this is going to work. And then he just kind of looked at me and was like, okay, Rich, you can just like leave now. I was okay. I get it. But you know, sometimes you just have a gut feel. And I was just so interested anyway that I went, okay. I was living in Hong Kong at the time, actually.
Oh, okay.
And I said to him, if I go to Poland, where he does these week-long retreats in the middle of winter, where you learn the technique and then do all these things that that he does. And I think it's interesting and worth exploring. Will you at least just give it a go? And I can't say no to that, right?
Yeah.
So I signed up to one of these trainings hosted by one of his instructors. And that trip in Poland was just transformative and just started everything, you know. The very first day, we did like a quick breathwork session in the morning, had breakfast, and then the instructor after breakfast is like, all right, guys, let's meet in the front of the hotel in 15 minutes, just wear your shorts. And we're like, wait, what's the instruction? Are we going to like build up to this or what?
Yeah.
And then we get to the front and he's like, we're going to go for a little walk now. It's -6 degrees outside. But you know what? It's okay. You got this. Hundreds of people have done this before and everyone's been okay. Just relax, slow down your breathing. Let's go.
Wow.
And that was it. That was the instruction. And we all looked at each other and we're going,
wow.
Okay. And then we walked for nearly 2 hours in the snow.
2 hours.
Barefoot.
And you had no prior training. You just
zero
went...
training.
Wow.
Just relax and trust. And everyone was fine. 25 of us there. All good. No
Incredible.
Problem whatsoever. And so that's just one thing. You know, we did all the swimming in the ice lakes. If you guys watch the Vice documentary, that's the retreat that I went on. It's the same place. The crescendo of it all is that you climb the tallest mountain on the Czech-Polish border. It takes about close to 4 hours to ascend.
Uh-huh.
And it was like -19 degrees, plus
no
wind
way.
And snow.
Wow.
Just wearing your shorts.
In your shorts.
Yeah,
oh my
in your
God.
Shorts.
That's incredible.
And all 25 of us got up. No frostbite, no hypothermia. Everyone's all good.
Wow.
And, you know, people think, you know, oh, there's got to be some really special breathing technique for withstanding the cold. The breathing technique is part of the Wim Hof method. Uh-huh. Does help with the cold, but only for a short period of time once you finish the breathing. We would do a breathing session and then, you know, hours later do our cold stuff. So actually that breath technique didn't necessarily have the residual chemical changes that helps with dealing with cold. It helps in different ways. So really, it's everyone can do it. There's no magic to it. It's just about relaxation.
Wow.
It's just about being able to and relax and say it's okay. I can withstand this.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's fascinating. I mean, I remember watching the documentaries. I remember him essentially his rebuttal to people saying, well, you're a genetic freak. You know, there's some reason as to why you can do it and no one else can. And he was like, well, I'll just teach a few people. And so he taught a few people essentially the method that you're talking about. And they were able to perform feats similar, perhaps not as extreme as him, but still as extreme as you've just described. That's pretty extreme.
Totally. And the other thing is that he has a twin brother.
Right. I didn't know that.
Who can't do the things that he does.
Really? Yeah. Oh, wow. Interesting.
So it's like... It couldn't be a more perfect scenario, you know, for debunking. It's just a genetic thing. He has a twin brother that can't do the things he does.
Well, it's really interesting that you picked up on the fact that the breathing will only last for so long in terms of the chemical changes that you can measure in your blood. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But, you know, that's very, very interesting to me because I'm fascinated by the pathophysiology, the biochemical changes that can allow people to perform those sorts of feats that are unimaginable. Like, I can't imagine myself doing that, but I'm intrigued. But that in itself is a massive mystery to me. I mean, we're definitely evolutionary. We've developed an evolutionary performance level so we can withstand those sorts of conditions. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to survive. But that in itself is quite perplexing to me. I don't get it.
I am such a huge believer that we do not understand, not even half, like, and
oh,
like
yeah,
barely anything that we're capable of as human beings. I'm a big fan of this guy called Dr. Joe Dispenza, and this is a bit off breathwork, but he preaches. It's not right the word. He teaches a way of thinking about the mind-body connection and then also how that kind of interacts with our external environment as well. And he goes on about a lot of things, but one of his big things he focuses on is self-healing. So the being able to heal yourself from things that we're not supposed to be able to purely through thought and meditation. really amazing, amazing guy. And I've been following his work for quite some time. He's got quite a few books out, and I've been doing his exercises and absolutely love them. And he did a retreat in Brighton last year in November, and I went along. Retreat's a loose word because there were 900 people there.
Oh, wow.
So it was, I guess, like a week-long
sounds
event.
Sounds like a conference.
Yeah. And I wanted to see other people doing it. Because I'm very fortunate that I don't have too many physical ailments, and mm-hmm. I wanted to see people who really had some things going on and see what they were able to do. And I saw some things, and I'll tell you exactly what only things that I witnessed with my own eyes and saw. There was a guy in the beginning with Parkinson's disease, full tremors all over, had to walk with two canes, and major pain going up and down his spine. After I think it was 3 days, only tremors left in his right hand and no pain whatsoever.
Wow.
Walking completely unassisted. People with major food intolerances, celiac, that kind of thing, eating bread, pasta, anything, with zero symptoms after a couple of days. A lady who was partially blind from a stroke, full vision restored after a few days.
That's crazy.
And purely through the power of the mind. Mm. And it all sounds super woo-woo.
Yeah.
And even in my mind, it's kind of like, is that really possible?
Yeah.
But then you witness it.
Yeah.
And then you go, wow, yeah. Okay, maybe there's something to this. And, you know, I went in super open-minded anyway because, like, I teach breathing for a living.
Yeah.
And and so to do that, you kind of have to be pretty open-minded anyway.
Yeah.
And through my own experiences with breath work, I have seen incredible transformation, things that you would not believe.
I'd love to get into that in a bit.
Of course, of course.
Because I'm a firm believer. I mean, your story with your father. Oh, we didn't finish
it. No, yeah. Diverted again.
Well, let's go for that.
So
you went to Poland.
Came back to
this.
Poland, yeah. Mm-hmm. Showed dad the photos, told them the stories. To cut a long story short, he went, okay, there's maybe something to this. Fast forward, you know, 4 years now. He's been breathing every day, cold showers every day, changed his diet in a big way, which is, as you know, very, very important, particularly for people with autoimmune issues. And his MS progression just stopped in his tracks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hasn't and he's had a single attack that since. Sort of remission at the moment.
Complete
That's
remission.
That's very, very interesting.
So, and I've shared the story on like a few magazine articles and stuff, and I've had people reach out and say like, "I'm doing the same thing and it works."
Wow.
You know,
that's really. I mean, like, there's so much nuance to the subject, particularly within MS. I mean, there's different types, and you know, some are secondary and primary, some are relapsing, remitting, etc. The story does certainly resonate with me on a number of levels. When I had my own issues with atrial fibrillation, which is an irregular heart rhythm, I was beating very fast and there are no clear triggers, and this was going on over about a year and a half or so. I was told to have a potentially curative procedure involving an intervention where a part of the heart is essentially burnt with a laser. And all my colleagues were definitely supportive of this action. I was a very good candidate for it. It's a relatively safe procedure. The one person who wasn't was my mum, who isn't medically trained, who is very of the much of the mind of an Ayurvedic way of life. And I know that comes into breathing, and we'll chat about that in a bit. But she was the one that asked me to examine my lifestyle and try to optimize every element that was in the locus of my control. So my stress, breathing, meditation that I was taught when I was a teenager, food, obviously, sleep hygiene, all these different things. And I think it really serves. And yes, after, you know, a period of a year or so, my AF episodes relinquished, and you know, I've been AF free for a number of years, and I still have the checks with cardiologists. And for them, it's perplexing. For me, again, it is still like I'm trying to retrospectively figure out what I did. And I think it serves as a metaphor for a lot of people who don't really understand just how much control we have over our own physiology. Breathing is your sort of focus and perhaps your bias as well on that. But collectively, you know, we have so many different elements of our lifestyle that we can control to improve our well-being. Breath work, yes, diet, sleep hygiene, stress management, community, sense of purpose, a whole bunch of other things that I talk about in the books and stuff and the rest of the podcast. But it's educating people on how they can become experts of their own health that I'm super passionate about. And I love hearing these stories. They're really amazing. And you know, I think the biggest secret for a lot of people is that your body is one incredible self-healing machine. And that sounds very woo, but when you look at the chemistry, when you cut your hand, for example, and you know the rebuilding of the skin and how the inflammatory process is very adaptive to essentially signal and these beautifully designed pathways to fix something, you know, this is something that is happening every day of every second, and like trillions of different processes happening simultaneously. When you understand that, you begin to figure out why certain things can happen and why, you know, if we put our body in the best environment, it can lead to these remarkable improvements.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I know, like, my focus is breath work, absolutely. And you know, because it had such a big effect on my life and the people that I've seen around me. But a big part of that is also just because there isn't a focus enough yet.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So I've just seen this huge gap and gone, guys, like, this is something that needs attention, because, you know, there's 7 billion people on this planet, all of whom can breathe. Mm. You know, maybe not everyone feels like doing yoga or going to the gym. Maybe not everyone has access to the healthiest food, but everyone can breathe. And for now, it's free.
Yeah. So like, for now, it's free.
But so there's, you know, if increasing the quality of your life by 10% as simple as learning a little bit about your breathing and being able to use it in a way that's useful for you, then that's such an easy win.
I know, totally.
But I completely agree. You know, with diet, lifestyle, any lifestyle, whether it's sleep, stress. I mean, I can't. Emphasize stress enough.
Yeah.
You know, my brother's a physio, absolutely incredible physio back in Oz. You know, he sees 70 patients a week.
Wow.
And he ate like 5-6 years ago said the number one problem is stress.
Yeah.
In our society. And back then I was in the most stressful job in the world and I was like, yeah, whatever, man, you just don't get it. But now I see it.
Sort of like that dualistic perspective we have in medicine, actually, of mind and body being separate. You know, we treat the body and we treat the mind. Well, that's up to the psychiatrist, the psychologist. The two are not connected, whereas actually, you know, there is a huge cranial nerve that starts in the brain, crosses the blood-brain barrier, goes straight into the spleen, and is responsible for inflammatory proteins and stuff, and we can manipulate that with breathing and other stress relieving techniques, and the mind-body interventions that I think are gathering a lot more attention, at least in the scientific field, certainly warrant more attention on the ground as frontline practitioners and just generally for people to know about. So commend your work, man. That's great. Well, let's get into that. So you, after that retreat, you came back, and then
came back and I had an incredible experience, and the cold work is fantastic, but the breathing is what really got me. You know, I've always had episodes of depression in my life, and kind of like this underlying existential anxiety, you know, just that thinking of like, why am I here? Like, what's the point of all this? What are we supposed to do in this life? And the first time I had a deep breathwork session using the Wim Hof method in Poland, gave me so much clarity, gave me all these incredible feelings, this incredible feeling this first time of just like complete power and confidence, and like I can do anything, and that like my past is not part of me at all. I'm here right now in the present and I can do anything. And I never forgot that experience. And I was like, man, if everyone could have that, that would be incredible. And then throughout the week, you know, having different experiences each time, doing different breathing sessions, and it just shifted so much for me mentally and emotionally. So once I came back, I'm telling you, it completely changed just after 1 week. It was transformative. And that started my obsession of like, okay, so what else are people doing with breathing? Like, is this the only thing? And after doing a lot of research, I found out that there are a lot of ways to breathe. And there are a lot of people doing different things. So you have your more traditional, more well-known practices like, you know, it was pranayama, so yogic styles of breathing, kundalini. And then
pranayama, just for the listener, is the yogic breathing where you use your nostrils or you block.
Pranayama is the umbrella term for all the breathing techniques as part of the yogic tradition. So that's like alternative nostril breathing is just one technique. Yeah. Wow. And then in Chinese medical breathing, so things like Qigong, and even in Tai Chi. So those are like kind of well known now. But then there was this whole underground, almost like all these underground styles of breathing that sat kind of in like alternative therapy land.
Yeah.
And these are things like, I'll say some names, might not mean such much to many people, but like rebirthing, uh-huh. holotropic breathwork, and mainly from those two guys, there's stemmed a whole bunch of other styles as well. And that was interesting because you start to hear about people who are having these incredible cathartic emotional releases, shifting years of trauma in one breath session, having transcendental experiences yeah. where they meet past loved ones or meet God and all this kind of very out there stuff that yeah. I was like, I mean, that sounds kind of crazy that you can just do that by breathing. But I had such an interesting experience and did something I didn't know I could do in Poland. Maybe there's something there as well.
Yeah, it almost parallels like some of the experiences that people have on psychedelics as well. And psychedelics are becoming very popular, I think, in terms of a scientific perspective. So there's some really interesting research looking at specific types of psychedelic substances on PTSD,
yes.
on major depressive episodes. There's a whole bunch of papers now being published on it because I think recently, I think it was the FDA allowed scientists to start using these substances in the lab.
Yeah, in the lab, and I think it's the state of Oregon in the States, and they're looking at 2020 trying to legalize psilocybin for medical use or clinical use perhaps.
Yeah.
I think we are moving in that direction where people are becoming much more understanding, just removing the stigma of things and going, what does it actually do? Like what evidence do we have of what can happen? And I have a theory, and it's yet to be proven because for certain styles of breath work, there's not enough research around it yet. But I have a theory that for a lot of those deeper, what I call integrative styles of breath work, where you are going into the states of mind where you can have those cathartic releases, what's happening in the body and your physiology is very similar to when you do psychedelics.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's my theory at this point.
Because I have a theory about one of the reasons why we experience post-runner's high or euphoric effects after having a HIIT training session. Mm. When you're doing a HIIT training session, you're really breathing fast.
Mm.
So not only are you combining the breath work, you're also combining that with the anti-inflammatory effects of the exercise. You're pushing yourself very, very fast. And so perhaps that is in part why people still feel so energized and refreshed after doing HIIT training.
It
improves your motivation, improves your mood. I personally do HIIT training in the mornings, and I know when I don't, I'm less happy throughout the whole day, or I'm less sort of like I'm less active. I'm just like, you know, I've obviously done my HIIT training this morning, so I'm feeling pretty happy about myself. But I think that might be one of it's just a hypothesis, but yeah.
No, the happy hormone factory is producing, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah, there's a great book. It's called Stealing Fire, and I am just blanking on the author. He's incredibly well known, so this is really annoying. But Stealing Fire,
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah,
in the book,
and it's all about going into states of flow.
Uh-huh.
He talks about psychedelics specifically, and he outlines a few things that are very, very interesting. He references this phenomenon called what's called transient hypofrontality, where the activity in the more advanced parts of the human brain, like the prefrontal cortex, gets turned down, and you start to experience more of what's happening in the emotional parts and the more primal parts, like your limbic system. It's my impression that this is the exact same thing that happens when you're doing breath work.
Sounds interesting.
And so that's why you can have these emotional releases, is that the parts of the brain that are responsible for essentially holding stuff in, you know, because the prefrontal cortex and these advanced parts of our brain are the parts that, you know, keep track of time, personality, rules, regulations, you know, everything that makes us human, that allows us to do all these great things like making podcasts and that kind of thing, that gets, you know, put to the side for a second, and we get to come down to what's there and dig a little bit deeper, and then you can start to experience things.
I find that very interesting, actually, because there have been some studies looking at, I can't remember the types of breathing work that they did, but they looked at activity in the prefrontal cortex after having breathing exercises, and they found greater activity. And the subjective experiences of those people in the trials married that of, you know, someone becoming a little bit more creative, feeling a bit more happy about themselves, and that sort of process of going back into your like limbic system and actually having greater awareness of your surroundings. I mean, it does sound like a psychedelic experience.
Well, a lot of people who come to my classes, they come out of it and they're like, this stuff's better than MDMA. Like, I just feel like I've just been tripping on acid and it's just breathing. You know, getting high on your own supply, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can use breathing for so many reasons, right? And
for those who are interested actually in psychedelics, not that I encourage people to try psychedelics or MDMA, How to Change Your Mind is a book by Michael Pollan. He's a fantastic science writer. He did The Omnivore's Dilemma, which is another great read. But he's done a deep dive into the world of psychedelics, when the term psychedelic was actually coined, what the research was showing pre the time that it was banned, and what the current research is looking at the moment. He actually self-experimented a whole bunch of times with different types in different clinical scenarios with guides, etc. He's not actually a fan of it being freely available at this point in time, which I'm in agreement with, actually. His reasons are described in his book. And it's a fantastic book, I think. You can listen to it on Audible as well. I'll put the links in the show notes. But I think, yeah, it's definitely something that is framing a different way of looking at the mind itself.
Yes, I've read the book as well. It is amazing. Look, I've been to Peru. I have a curious mind, and especially doing breath work, one to very, very open to things that could help people.
Yeah.
And before you start to give advice to others and teach people things, you have to research yourself, right? And see what's going on. So, I completely agree. It just like you said, it just frames this perspective that so much is possible, you know? And I think for so many people, that's the biggest block to their own healing in particular, to their own health and to their own happiness, is that they don't believe that there is a way for them to get there, you know? And with you know, more and more evidence, well, don't even really need evidence anymore. Neuroplasticity, it's a thing. We know that we can rewire the way that we think. And I mentioned Dr. Joe Dispenza before. He has a great book called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, really? Amazing book. Yeah, yeah.
I've never heard of this guy.
You will like him, I promise. He's a doctor of Cairo originally, but then has further education in neuroscience. And the cool thing about his work is that he backs everything up with science. Like, he's done all the research, all the fMRIs, all the HRV work. Like, he really looks into it deeply. And so I think it's really, really exciting. And all these different things, whether it's breath work, whether it's psychedelics, whether it's food, lifestyles, you know, it's all just, they're all just different tools. And some stuff will work better for others, but I'm a big believer in the holistic approach, that there needs to be an element of everything.
Why don't we break it down a bit, because I think we've just dived straight into this and stuff. We're going down a rabbit hole, which is exactly what happens whenever you know, we get two creative people talking about it. But breathing itself is quite an incredible activity that has both involuntary and voluntary control. It's something that's very unique to breathing, and I think it's something that a lot of people don't really understand. I mean, we don't really think about our breath as being a tool at all, but there is certainly, and I always think this, there is a reason, sounds very Darwinian, but there is a reason why we have developed the way we have. There is a reason why we sleep, for example. There is a reason why we have both involuntary and voluntary ability to change our breathing. In the same way, we don't have that ability for our heart. We're not as consciously anyway, but why don't we talk a bit about that?
Yeah, and you know, there's like, it's a, to simplify, one of the laws of nature is if you don't use it, you lose it.
Okay,
right? Yeah. So if we have a function in our body, it's because that it serves a purpose. Like you said, you know, breathing is, I'm pretty sure, the only function where that is completely unconscious, but then also completely under our control. You know, most people have never thought about their breathing their entire life. Yet if everyone would just take a deep breath in now and just relax out, you can follow along easily.
Exactly.
Yeah, everyone can do it.
I imagine everyone just did that.
Yeah. And that's why it's so interesting and so unique as a tool, because our breathing is governed by this thing called the autonomic nervous system. it's the only part or only function of the autonomic nervous system that we do have control over. Mm. Therefore, it's the gateway. It's like the lever that we that allows us to get into there and start to control all the things that this nervous system is responsible for. As it turns out, it's responsible for some pretty important things, you know, whether it's our endocrine system, cardiovascular system, respiratory systems, you name it, there's an element of autonomic activity there. Mm-hmm. So that's why it can be so useful. And you know, ancient traditions have known this forever, you know, whether they knew that was the reason why, but they've worked it out and have been able to utilize this great tool that everyone has called breathing into their practice to improve their, you know, their physical, mental and emotional well-being. And it's so nice now that the science, at least in the West, is starting to catch up and prove out more, okay, this is why it works.
Yeah.
You know, science is the language of our times, right? It's what resonates with everybody. Some people are able to believe in different things without necessary scientific proof, but if there's science there, it means that, all right, this is pretty definitive, we're pretty on board with this. And so it's so nice to see that happening, and I want to bring more of that to into breath work, because there are other types of breath work that haven't had science, you know, dive into so much yet.
Yeah. I found a lot of interesting articles actually when I was researching for my second book, Eat a Bit Illness, because not only do I go into the food and nutritional science with regard to improving our brain health, our immune health, our cardiovascular health, I talk about the lifestyle sort of additions to that. And time again, there's a few practices, yogic exercises, qigong, like you mentioned, and a couple of others, but also breathing and stress relieving techniques and mind-body interventions, of which those are a couple as well. And there was a paper that I think I referenced in the book from two associate clinical psychiatrist professors at Columbia University in New York, and they summarize a lot of the work looking at breath work and why this has almost like pleiotropic effects on so many different issues, whether it be improving your immunity or cardiovascular disease, for example. There's a few things that we do know that happens when we breathe, but I think that's distinct for certain types of breathing, and I think we'll get into that in a second. But as a rule of thumb, yes, BDNF is increased, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a factor that we use, and there's a whole bunch of things that can upregulate BDNF as well as other trophic factors, but that increases neurogenesis, which is the production of new neuronal cells, which is obviously important for cognition, protecting against dementia as well, and cognitive decline that happens as we age, as we build up oxidative stress in our cells. It improves heart rate variability, which is very topical right now. I think a lot of people have got HRV monitors. I think the Apple Watch might even have one.
Yeah, they have an ECG now, I think. They're really getting into it. Yeah,
I remember getting that actually, because at the time I was trying to monitor my own atrial fibrillation episodes and trying to capture the beats. And it was very easy for me. I'd just walk into my A&E and speak to my consultant, like, could you do an ECG on me? But heart rate variability, for those of you who don't know, it's the variability between each heartbeat that we experience during the day. And in a stressed state, you actually have a lower HRV, and an unstressed state, as you have a higher HRV. So you have a higher variability, which doesn't sound very intuitive to a lot of people initially. You think, why is it more variability?
Shouldn't it be steady?
Yeah. Why are you scatterbrained? I like to think of it as like, you know, you're chilled out, you don't really care about how variable you are, you know. Whereas if you're stressed, you're very, you know, I'm tapping on the desk right now. The producer's probably looking at me. But you're in that stress state, you've got a lower variability and you're very rigid, essentially. And that correlates with a lot of cardiovascular issues as well as mental health issues and a couple other features as well, which I found absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, breathing has a very profound effect on your HRV. You know, you can even check it yourself if you hold your pulse and feel your pulse and then inhale and just feel how fast it's beating, and then exhale and then see how fast it's beating. You'll find that just by doing that, you'll feel the speed of your pulse change. HRV is, you know, it's a great measure of, I'm not sure if anyone calls it this, but I call it this, your nervous system flexibility.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's your ability to be able to switch between this active state and this passive, more peaceful state. And
I like that description. Yeah. It's a really interesting description of that, because we have like metabolic flexibility as a term anyway, between how well you can be adapted to a high carbohydrate versus a low carbohydrate diet. Carry on.
No, you're right. If you check your heart rate, your pulse, and if you see a significant difference between your inhales versus your exhales, then it's showing that your HRV is higher. You have more of that nervous system flexibility, which is a great thing.
I can imagine, like in ancient traditions, they would have done it that way because they didn't obviously have the technology back then to measure HRV, right?
You know, there's what they've worked out. Researchers have worked out is there's a they've termed it coherent breathing, and they did research to work out what is the optimal pace to be able to breathe to be able to maximize your HRV. And what they did through all their trials is that it's somewhere between 3.5 to 6 breaths per minute, depending on the person.
6.5 to 10 breaths per minute.
3.5 to 6 breaths per minute. Yeah. And
that is low.
It's super, super low, considering most people will breathe somewhere between 14 to 20 times.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I thought, like, when I rest at night, my breath is around 15 to 16 per minute. So that's in a very relaxed state, I find. But
yeah, I would look at trying to bring that down. And 3.5 to 6 is not necessarily your resting state. Mm. That's a purposeful, conscious state. Like, I tell people generally, if you can get it between 9 to 12,
gotcha,
that's fantastic. That's also, just for reference, that breath is inhale and an exhale of the same length. Mm-hmm. So coherent breathing, I believe, is 5 breaths per minute, which is a 6-second inhale and a 6-second exhale. And that is a great, great, great technique for helping to relax, because it's balancing and harmonizing your frequencies across your brain, across your heart, across your lungs, and calming everything down in a really nice way. But again, that's one way to use your breath to affect that. There are other ways as well that you can use your breath to affect that. I had this med tech company come to one of my classes, and I don't think they created it, but at least they have a device that measures something called cardiovagal tone. Mm-hmm. So vagal tone, for anyone who doesn't know it, is a measure of activity in the vagus nerve, which is one of the biggest nerves as part of your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your relaxation part of your nervous system.
It's the 10th cranial nerve that goes all the way down to the past the diaphragm and the spleen.
Exactly. And it's so vagal tone is a great measure of essentially how relaxed you are. So the higher, the better. And so these guys wanted to come. They wanted to see, what is this breathing class doing? And the breathing classes I do isn't putting on some whale song and breathing nice and gently and just relaxing and falling off to sleep. No, it's a scientifically formulated sequence of breathing techniques to create effects in the body on purpose. So there's some very fast breathing at some points. There'll be slow breathing at some points. There'll be breath holding at some points. There'll even be muscle tension. A whole bunch of different things happen. So they chucked on the device and they measured a couple of people, and then we were looking at the results afterwards, and the guy, the scientist who was looking at the results, he's like proper dry kind of fellow, really nice guy, but wasn't showing his emotions, and he was looking at the data, and I was looking over his shoulder, and it wasn't really making sense to me. I couldn't really work out what it was saying. So I kind of asked him, I went, okay, is this good? Is this bad? What's going on? And with a completely stone face, he just goes, "This is remarkable." And I just kind of looked at him for a little while. I was like, "Are you taking the piss or are you being serious?" What we were able to measure was we were able to increase vagal tone over a 20-minute breathing session. Not just a little bit. Not even just doubling it, which by itself would be crazy. Not even tripling it, not even quadrupling it. We increased it by nearly 600%.
That's incredible.
And that's absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
So there are some really amazing things that we can do. And I knew that that was going to be the case, just because of the feedback that I always see and the results I see in people. People come out of the breathing sessions and they go, "I've never experienced anything like that in my life. Mm. I've never felt this way before." I think so many people in this particular modern society have just this base level of stress. They've forgotten what it actually feels like to be relaxed. So they're so used to operating out of this sympathetic nervous system that even when they are kind of relaxed, they're still relatively sympathetic, and they've completely forgotten what it's like to actually be in a state of pure relaxation, which when you look into what a lot of the ancient traditions will say is supposed to be like a almost like a blissful, euphoric, peaceful state of feeling so good for absolutely no reason whatsoever. And this allows people to start to get back to that and start to go, oh my gosh, like, I didn't know that I could feel this way. Maybe I did once, but I've forgotten.
For the listeners, like, it's quite interesting to hear that, because obviously you know intuitively that that's what they're experiencing, and now you have some of the evidence to back that up. But what's going on in psychiatry is this understanding of the mind-body connection and how increasing vagal tone specifically might actually be a therapeutic option. So it stems from this idea of inflammation being in part related to mental health conditions, in particular anxiety, low mood, even severe mental health issues as well. And if you can control or increase vagal tone to reduce the production of inflammatory proteins like cytokines, that can actually cross the blood-brain barrier and cause, in some way, a causal with mental health issues, then this could be a genuine therapeutic option. And there are actually pharmaceutical companies looking at devices to increase vagal tone. I obviously shudder to that, because I think there are other things that we can do before we get to that point where we're in attaching people to electronic devices to essentially increase vagal tone. And that is a very, very interesting technique that I think is catching on in some of the psychiatric world anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm being approached quite often by people in the mental health industry asking, is there a way to learn what you teach? And obviously, there's a whole bunch of things that you can do. And I think eventually I'm going to have to start a school or something.
You should definitely look into the EEGs actually as well. And if you come across some of the research behind that?
I would love to. In fact, I'm probably going to invest in my home setup.
Really?
Yeah. I know they're not cheap, but I think it's worth it. One of my missions is to try and bring as much data to this as possible.
Yes,
so
yeah.
I already have an HRV monitor.
Gotcha.
I have a home EEG, like it's kind of like one of those consumer ones. It's called the Muse headband, which is more designed as a biofeedback mechanism for meditation, but you can take...
I think I've come across that. Is it something that like
sits
a
around,
strip?
Like, yeah, yeah, it's like a little headband that goes around.
Yeah, it's like a mini EEG. It's nowhere near
full blown.
It doesn't have like a clinical application,
no.
But it's a good starting point.
It's a great starting point, and you can pull the raw data from it. It's a bit hacky, but you have to try and work. But I think I'm going to get like a full blown EEG, and just so that I can just do stuff at home, because I am fascinated by it. I want to somehow get access to fMRIs.
Yeah,
and do breathing sessions in fMRI. And
dude, get yourself a research graduate. I'm sure, like anyone listening to this podcast, we have lots of people, PhDs, graduates, biochemists, as well as medics and medical students that are fascinated by the field of lifestyle medicine. If you get someone with a background in research, there are some clinical psychiatrists actually looking at EEGs with specific regard to a yogic practice called Sky or Sudarshan Kriya yogic breathing, which there's so many different names. So I don't know how yoga teachers and stuff keep impressing with the different names, but they hypothesize that it leads to greater neuroplasticity and greater neural flexibility is what they've termed it when you practice these breathing techniques, and they've shown that there's greater coherence in their EEGs of patients that have gone through this. So I totally see you essentially creating more data from this to produce, even if it is just like a few patients at a time or a few people coming into the studies at a time, but definitely it's something you should investigate. I totally see that vision of medical practitioners or health practitioners actually being taught the ways of watching someone breathe. I mean, in a clinical sense, we are already taught to stat any medical students and doctors listen to this will concur with this. We stand at the edge of the bed for the hospital patient. We look at the way they're breathing. We look at things around the patient, what lines might be going in, you know, what their oxygen saturation monitor is. We look for clinical manifestations of clinical disease when we look at the end of the bed. So how they're breathing, a person with heart disease or a person with a pneumonia, they might have more rapid breathing. But the degree to how we look at patients who just come in clinic who don't have an obvious respiratory disease are pretty blind to that. I mean, we look at other things like, you know, how they're sitting. Are they cross-legged? Are they angry? You know, very, very basic levels of trying to read someone's body language. But I think the way they breathe is something that would be completely lost on me. And I'm definitely going to be looking out for that the next time I'm in a clinic.
Well, I think it's important to make a to distinguish between respiration and breathing. Because I think I'm writing a book at the moment. I'm pretty sure one of the chapters is going to be called something along the lines of, you know, the science of respiration and the behavior of breathing. So respiration is what's happening internally inside of us. So what is happening in terms of you know, the diffusion of oxygen, the transport of oxygen, the balance of gases in the blood, and how that's serving us at a cellular level, at a chemical level, and a neurological level.
Sort of
the physiology of actually breathing.
Happens,
of
ventilation.
And breathing itself, the actual act of doing it, is a behavior. And, you know, the human body is a habit-forming machine. And if for one reason or another we learn a way different way of breathing that maybe isn't anatomically correct or actually puts us into a stress response, you know, and we, you know, when we something happens, we feel anxiety, or if we have a panic attack, we breathe differently, right? Our breathing reflects the way that we feel. And if we are in that feeling for long enough, the body's going to remember how to breathe that way. And because it is so closely linked to, you know, our autonomic nervous system, our neurology, what it means is that even if we have no reason whatsoever to feel stressed or anxious, but we're breathing in a stressed or anxious way, it's going to cause us to feel stressed or anxious. Again, it's going back to this mind-body connection, that how one influences the other and vice versa. So in the same way that our breath is a reflection of how we feel, we can use our breath to change the way that we feel. But if you have learned a way to breathe that doesn't make you feel good, and that's your habit now, ditching that feeling that doesn't make you feel good might be as simple as just learning to breathe a bit better.
That's amazing. I mean, it's almost like a vicious circle, right? Like a chicken egg scenario. Like, if you are stressed, you will breathe differently, and that will perpetuate your feelings of anxiety, and so the circle goes.
Yes.
Whereas if you can break that with simple techniques, like you're saying, that's really powerful. I can so see that, actually. And hopefully people listen to this will actually... just speaking to you, I'm actually a lot more conscious about the way I'm breathing.
I shouldn't have said I was watching. I'm sorry, but it's but that cycle, like, so you know, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. You know, I actually, Dr. Joe said this. Dr. Joe Dispenza, this guy I keep bloody talking about. I should be a salesman, I swear. You know, he has this quote where he goes, "If thoughts are the language of the mind, then feelings are the language of the body." So, you know, we have certain thoughts that happen in our mind, and then that can trigger for an emotion to happen within the body. And as you know, an emotion is simply a chemical reaction that happens and creates certain sensations, and then we group those sensations together and we define that as a feeling or an emotion. But what then happens is, if you start to feel, let's just take stress as one that's very common, the mind then picks up, oh, I'm feeling the stress, starts to think more stressful thoughts, which then creates more stressful chemicals, which then creates more stressful thoughts, and you get into that pattern. And it can be super, super hard to break, because it is like a, you know, it's like you're spiraling out of control. If you can use something like breathing as a way of taking the mind out of the body and creating a path out of that vicious cycle, because it can be quite hard. Like, meditation, for example, is another great way to do it. But like, meditation is like using the mind to control the mind, or to teach the mind, which can be quite tricky. Soup works.
Yeah.
It's, you know, 1,000 years of tradition. I meditate every single morning. But can be tricky, especially for people who are just starting. But breathing is using the body to get control of the mind. So you don't actually have to think anything. You just have to know, I know that I can use this technique because it does this. So let's just sit down, do this for 5 minutes, and it's just going to work.
I can see it almost like a gateway into meditation, right? Because in the same way, you know, we have to sharpen our body, we have to look after it with food, you know, changing the way we think using a physical tool that we all have, lungs, the ability to breathe in and out, that's quite a unique way of looking at it, actually. I never thought about it in that way.
And for those meditators out there, there's breathing practices that you can do to act as like a speed ramp into your meditation practice so that you get much more bang for your buck. I know there's all these like transcendental meditation and all these ones where it's like, you know, 20 minutes short and sharp, but you get like really good results. But then for the first 10 minutes, just kind of fidgeting, being like, don't think. You can breathe in a certain way for like 3 to 5 minutes. That's almost straight away going to switch off that thinking brain so that when you do your 20 minutes of meditation, you're getting like the absolute maximum efficiency.
I'm fascinated by how we can actually test those theories, because I think that one of the most commonly accepted understandings is that it increases GABA in the brain, which is a testable hypothesis, but it also reduces cortisol effects as well. So it'd be interesting, because I think the conversation with breathing and meditation is generally polarized towards mental health issues, stress, anxiety-related issues, etc. But actually, there's some gathering evidence about how mind-body interventions, breathing of one is one of them, can be utilized in immunotherapy, can be used as part of longevity techniques, reducing the issues of aging, inflammation is one. I find that as like almost like the sky's no limit for these sorts of interventions.
I think, and I apologize because I think we've gone through this conversation and I actually haven't even said what breath work is yet. And that's probably an important thing to mention, because that really frames a really good add-on to what you've just said. So I define breath work because it's kind of a lot of definitions and different schools have kind of taken it and made it their own, but I simply say breath work is any time you become aware of your breathing and then use it purposefully to change and improve your physical, mental, or emotional states. Simple as that, really.
That's a really succinct, nice way to describe it.
And it kind of captures everything, right? So whether you're doing pranayama, whether you're doing these, you know, these transcendental styles of breathing where you're having divine experiences, or just like a 2 to 3 minute technique just to help you to calm down, it's all breath work. Anytime you're using breathing, that's breath work. And so to your point, you know, once, and I think this is where more research can become super useful, is that breathing differently and in different ways is going to affect your physiology differently. So in the same way that you said, you know, you can breathe in certain ways to decrease your adrenaline, decrease your cortisol levels, increase GABA, no doubt. But then you can also breathe in a certain way to do the exact opposite if that's what you want to do. For example, to create energy in the body, sometimes it's nice to increase a bit of adrenaline, you know. And if we do breathing techniques with athletes in particular, athletes are a really interesting one, because before competition, either they will have they'll need to relax and calm down, or they'll need to get up and get energized. People will either become really lethargic when they're nervous, or they'll become hyperactive. So you need to be able to create a technique that works for both of those people. So sometimes you need to pump them up, or sometimes you need to bring him down a bit.
I always remember Lennox Lewis going into fights back in the day. I don't know if you ever watched him coming out of the changing room. He would sleep. He would literally have like a little nap right before he goes out and fights.
So sometimes you need just that little pump up, right? And you breathe in certain ways to make that happen for yourself, chemically, neurologically. So you can use breathing in all sorts of different ways. So it's interesting where we direct the research or the study, or where we emphasize what to look at, because, I mean, like you said, the sky's the limit.
It could be used for so many different things. And even the researchers looking at, you know, cardiovascular disease and things like gastrointestinal issues. I mean, you've had some patients, right, with some clients with IBS symptoms and improved.
And so I've had people with IBS who've come in, and again, you know, IBS is highly linked to stress, and stress is highly linked to the way that you breathe, and vice versa. So watching the way that they breathe, I can any person with a digestive issue, I already know how they're going to be breathing. Like, I can just picture it right now. And so all we do is make some simple changes, and even without any further intervention from dietary or any other medical supplementation, they can have drastic improvements in their symptoms. And And it was, again, just as simple as learning to breathe correctly.
Yeah.
even things like lower back pain, which is huge for so many people, is caused in a lot of cases, in my experience, by just the constant bracing of the muscles and intrinsic muscles in that area. And learning to breathe correctly means that you have to relax those muscles. So there are certain techniques and exercises that you can do. And I know a good friend of mine is also a Wim Hof instructor, and is, you know, big into breathing, and does that with all his patients. I think last time we talked about it, he was like, I can pretty much guarantee that any patient I have who has chronic back pain that, you know, no longer has anything to do with trauma, he can get rid of in like 10 days.
Wow.
Just by being, do 10 days of these breathing exercises and it will be gone.
And just posture and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because it's all one and the same. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I remember going to, I told you at the start, I'd been to a Wim Hof session.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it was in LA, it was a summit and a conference, and he got us all to do these breathing exercises. We should probably try some actually.
Yeah,
in a second.
Yeah.
Make sure if you are listening to this, you're at home, you're sat on a seat, something, you're not driving or anything. But he got us all to do these exercises where we over-oxygenate and we hyperventilate, essentially, and then held our breath for 2 minutes, and everyone was able to do it. It was quite remarkable. There was like 300 people there. It was pretty remarkable.
So I would like to say something around the over-oxygenation part, because I think for people who have tried a breathwork class before or something, the breathworkers are going to say quite often, because most people, this is what they're understanding, we're going to be introducing lots of oxygen into the body, and that's why you're going to get all these sensations, da-da-da-da. You know, our blood is already mostly saturated, you know. We sit, most people, at a healthy 97%, 98% blood oxygen saturation. And doing a lot of deep breathing isn't necessarily going to increase oxygen that much, because there's not much scope for more oxygen to be increased. What it does do is it does decrease a lot of carbon dioxide. Mm. You blow out a lot of carbon dioxide. And that, so when you do Wim Hof styles or any of these big hyperventilating styles of breathing, which is what it is, hyperventilating has a bad name, bad rap, because when people, they link it to things like panic attacks. And if you have like a breathing disorder where you're chronically hyperventilating, that can lead to all sorts of issues for sure.
When I look at blood gases in emergency department, you know, I can see, you know, when someone's come in, panic attack and stuff, and we have a look at the pH, and usually we see a respiratory alkalosis because of low carbon dioxide.
Exactly.
A little bit of a higher PO2 as well.
And they, so hyperventilation, if it's controlled and done with a purpose, can do some really interesting things. So Wim Hof method, you're going to be hyperventilating. A lot of these integrated forms of breath work where you are having these crazy experiences, it's hyperventilation. But it's not a bad thing if it's done purposefully for a short period of time and it's controlled. So you'll decrease the carbon dioxide. So that's the reason why everyone can hold their breath for so long. is because your oxygen levels jumped up a bit, but then your carbon dioxide just tumbled down. And so all of a sudden, and for those who don't know, the trigger to be able to feel like you need to breathe isn't due to a lack of oxygen in the body. It's actually due to a buildup of carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that. That's actually the marker.
So we have baroreceptors in our brain that will measure the carbon dioxide level, and that will be the trigger for you to breathe, essentially. So that it's actually quite harrowing when you have to, like, you know, if you're trying to hold your breath in the swimming pool, for example, or I remember doing this as kids and stuff, and it's very anxiety provoking.
Yeah,
and that's why I was quite surprised that so many people did it in a very calm fashion, but I suppose when you think about the physiology behind it, it makes perfect sense.
It's super interesting, and like one of the reasons why those styles of breathwork, specifically Wim Hof method, is so useful for people is that you're putting your body under a state of stress, but you're doing it consciously. You are in control. We keep talking about mind-body connection. You're starting to build this link between the body being in a stress response with this deep, fast breathing, which is actually causing an increase in adrenaline, and putting that body into a sympathetic mode, and being like, but it's okay, I'm doing this, I am in control. And then you do the breath hold, and for a little while, the breath hold's actually super, super pleasant, because the body just goes, oh, thank God you're not breathing deep anymore. And in fact, you know what? We're going to switch you straight into your parasympathetic for a while. You're going to enjoy that. When I was talking about doing the class where we measured cardiovagal tone, the points of the highest parasympathetic activity were when we was at the very beginning of a breath hold.
Right.
Yeah. So the body almost just goes, oh, thank God you're not doing that anymore. Yeah, yeah. Here we go. Let's relax. And you just, you swing massively the other way like a pendulum.
Yeah.
But then eventually the body starts to run really low on oxygen and it starts to release the stress hormones again and starts to wake you up and go, please, please breathe. Mm. So you're almost doing this interval training between putting your body into stress and putting your body into relaxation and then stress and then relaxation. Mm. But all the time you're in control and you're doing it. And that's probably the biggest, thing that I see with people who come to my classes a lot and my clients is that they completely recondition their relationship to stress. It's that whole cycle thing that we were talking about before, the thinking and feeling and feeling and thinking, that, you know, you're practicing being in stress with this breath, but you're in control and you know how to do it. And you're going, I'm fine, I'm okay. And that starts to get linked. Mm. So that when something happens in life and your unconscious thought then goes, oh, this is something that stresses me out, boom, let's release some stress hormones. Let's change the body, our physiology to get ready for action. And then the mind picks that up. You then just go, but I know how to deal with this. Mm. It's all good. I've got this. I do this all the time. And then you break the cycle.
Yeah.
And so I say people who do this work, they become unshakable.
Yeah.
Or more unshakable.
Yeah. There's quite a few parallels you can actually make with that and general cardiovascular exercise. The more exercise you do, the more resilient your body becomes. And no doubt, you know, exercise itself, if you to measure markers of inflammation in the blood after doing an intense exercise, it would be up because it's a pro-inflammatory activity. But over time, the benefits of exercise are thus because you become essentially used to those challenges and your body responds adaptively. It's almost like this plant hermetic effect, which I think is very interesting from a breath point of view.
One thing I want to mention as well, because you mentioned the pool, which is super important because I think people are starting to make links of like, you can hold your breath for a long time, pool. Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like maybe so all I need to do is do some of this like Wim Hof method or this deep breathing and then I can hold my breath for a really long time. So next time I go snorkeling, I'm going to be like a merman or a mermaid. It's really important that you don't do this type of breathing when you go swimming. Mm. I do free diving. It's not the right word, but they're very cautious about people who know Wim Hof method.
Right.
Because maybe without going into it too much, it can cause this thing called shallow water blackouts. Yeah. Uh-huh. So maybe Google that if that's of interest to you, but it's all to do with the levels of carbon dioxide and oxygen in your blood and how that changes when you're doing activity, especially after hyperventilation. So
the water is a completely different physiological environment to how we are in our normal atmosphere. So that's a very important message.
Yeah. So just make sure that you're not doing this and then thinking you can hold your breath for, you know, 10 minutes. Although, you know, if you train yourself, even without doing that deep breathing work, you can hold your breath for a really long time. It's part of the free diving training that you do. There's techniques to be able to learn to build up carbon dioxide resistance. So I think like my longest breath hold is something like 4 minutes, 22 seconds.
Wow.
And I didn't used to be able to do that. But you can train it up.
Yeah.
You know, Stig Severinsen is a very famous free diver and he's all about breath work now. Mm. And he's got his own like online course and, he has a lot of really good techniques as well.
Absolutely.
For people who are interested.
Well, let's try a little breath technique, shall we?
Yeah, okay. Well, what's the time? It's kind of approaching midday. So let's do something to create energy then, rather than try and wind us down because we don't need to wind down right now. So this is something that you guys can try. It comes from a Sufi tradition originally. I've changed it a little bit and made it kind of the way that I like it. I now call it the Energizer Bunny. And it's really simple. And within, you know, just a minute or 90 seconds of doing this, you're going to feel a profound difference in your energy levels. So doing this, if you're doing this at home, please just be in a safe place, seated or lying down. You can do it standing as well, actually. It's not a big deal. But just be in a place where you can just concentrate on this and not be disturbed. And so we're going to be creating some energy. It's very, very simple. It's three inhales through the nose, followed by a relaxed sigh out through the mouth. And I call it the energizer bunny because when people do it, they kind of like, you know, they crinkle up their nose as they're trying to inhale fast enough, because right. the pace of this breathing is actually quite fast and it's quite, it's quite intense. And you're going to keep it up for, between 16 and 90 seconds to you'll feel the effect. But if you can do it for longer, if you need more energy.
Okay.
So it's super, super simple. So I'll demonstrate. The important thing is that as you inhale, you're not exhaling out. So in between the three inhales, you're not breathing out in between each one. So you're progressively filling up your lungs more and more, like a ladder kind of function. Mm-hmm. So I'll demonstrate very, very quickly. And this gives you an idea of the pace that we're talking about. So three inhales through the nose, followed by a relaxed sigh out through the mouth. So it goes like this. So it's quite fast.
Yeah.
And keeping that going for like 60 seconds,
I'm
90 seconds.
I'm watching my producer at the moment.
He's
going to try.
And so I don't know if you want to actually do a guided session for 60 seconds now, or we can just give them the instruction. They can try it at home. But the important thing as you're doing that breathing to focus on is breathing and thinking of filling yourself up from the bottom to the top. What I mean by that is breathing lower, like breathing into your lower body first, then filling up into your mid and then into your upper chest. A lot of people habitually breathe very high up into their chest, into their shoulders, which has a whole host of, you know, negative physiological effects. So focus on trying to breathe lower. And what that looks like is your belly pops out, your bottom ribs will flare out. And so starting low and then filling yourself up. So yeah, so what I want to do is...
I'm actually going to try it. Let's do it for 60 seconds.
Do you want to do it for 60 seconds?
Let's do it.
All right,
yeah,
maybe producer can time.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So if you exhale out... And let's go. So, now keep going. So, by the time you get to your third breath, you want to feel like you're pretty full. So, you're taking like really nice big breaths in. Yeah. Nice. I can see producers going at it as well. So as you're doing this breath, you might start to feel a little bit lightheaded. You might start to feel a little bit dizzy. That's okay, guys. That's totally fine. It's totally safe. You can breathe this way for hours with absolutely no detrimental effect. You're just doing something new, creating different changes in your physiology. And with new changes comes new experiences, new feelings, and new sensations. So just keep going if you can. If you feel like you're, it's feeling like quite intense, can you just relax into that intensity? Can you just kind of into it? I think that was 1 minute. How do you feel, mate?
Oh, great. Really good, yeah.
And producer's
nodding.
Yeah,
he liked that.
And but one thing I'll have to say, Doc, is... I think we need to do a session because I want to look at your breathing.
Definitely, yeah. I definitely breathe high up into my chest.
Yeah.
When I'm commuting as well, I'm definitely like highly strong. I don't like being in the train, for example. Mm. And that kind of breathing pattern I've realized kind of permeates the rest of my day.
Yes.
And I try and have like mindful moments. So when I'm in A&E and I'm washing my hands like between patients, I try and have a moment there where I'm breathing through my nose and not through my mouth. But it'd be great to get like some steps for like, you know, breathing for sleep, breathing for commuting, breathing for motivation, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you have this on your website or some of the workshops you do.
Yeah, in the workshops that I do, I talk a lot about, there are various workshops. So some of the workshops are more geared towards that from like a therapeutic perspective. So, you know, working through perhaps traumas, having emotional, releases and that kind of thing. But then I do a lot of workshops which are more around the mechanics of breathing and how you can use it. I'll fix your own breathing to start off with, and then how you can use it day to day to be able to, create real and shift the quality of your life in a really big way. I probably need to get better at doing some online contact. My Instagram, I do put quite a bit of stuff on there. I think the biggest, most useful resource is something that unfortunately isn't out yet. So I am writing a book. this is the thing that is my big focus right now. Is I'm taking all my learnings over the last you know, a few years and putting it together into something that is really useful for everybody. So it's going to have a way to be able to assess your breathing, give you plans based off your assessment on how to fix it, and then a host of different breathing techniques for all different scenarios. So like you just said, breathing for stress, breathing for anxiety, breathing to sleep, breathing to relax, breathing for motivation is a good one, breathing for addictions. I've had people who quit smoking just through breath work. Breathing for creativity, breathing for pain relief.
I can so see this being a really important resource for a lot of people. And you can pre-order now, right?
You can pre-order now. It's on Amazon, March 2020.
What's
that's it. Exhale, the science and art of breathwork.
The science and art of breathwork. Yeah. I love it.
And and then there's also a lot of medical styles of breathing as well. So breathing for high, low blood pressure, breathing for autoimmune diseases, just like my dad, breathing for asthma, breathing for digestive issues, breathing for things like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, ME, and a whole host of more. Yeah, there are lots of different things that you can do. Just using your nose and your mouth, it works real well.
I can't wait for my personal breath session, and I'll definitely go to one of your workshops soon,
please.
Buddy. But thank you so much for coming, mate. This has been brilliant, and I'll put all the links to your socials on the show notes and stuff. But mate, pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much. It's amazing. I love your work, love everything you do, and I can't wait to show you some breathing.
Definitely.
And to breathe you. I'm trying to get this terminology out there.
What an episode with Richie. Like I said, you can catch Richie at thebreathguy.co.uk and The Breath Guy on Instagram. His website has links to all of his workshops. Plus, his book, Exhale, The Science and Art of Breathing, is going to be out in March 2020. I'll put the pre-order link on the show notes as well. To summarize, we talked about how breathing can increase heart rate variability, BDNF and EEGs, and different sorts of ways in which we can measure this activity demonstrate just the power of breathing and what we can potentially do with breathing in the future. Now, the science isn't there yet as a therapeutic intervention, but I certainly believe that breathing has a place in modern life, particularly if you think about all the different modern day stresses and the experiences that we have on a daily basis. You can find links to all the different scientific studies that we chatted about on the show notes at thedoctorskitchen.com. Make sure you check out Eat to Beat Illness. It's out now. I talk about brain health, immunity, skin, heart health, and I introduce some of the ideas and concepts around mind-body interventions like breathing and yoga, as well as 80 new delicious recipes that you can cook at home. Make sure you subscribe to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. Give this a 5-star review if you loved Richie talking. It really does help other people find the podcast. I'll catch you in the kitchen, and I will catch you on the podcast next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.